Thanks everyone for coming. Thanks. So my talk today, I'm Dean Hall. I'm the project lead on DayZ, and my talk today is all about designing DayZ. And it was actually a hard presentation to write because this is the first presentation I guess I've given to my peers. So. I'm a New Zealander. I was educated at the University of Otago, same university as Chris Butcher, who I went to school with from Bungie. I spent some time in the Air Force and the Army. I worked at She Interactive, actually like our old tech director is here somewhere, in New Zealand, and had a really good time there, and I got a really good grounding through them. I'm a prolific modder. The KSP guys are in the audience somewhere as well. I'm super fan of their game and I love modding it. And that's kind of, I guess, where I came from. So the reason that I'm talking here is DayZ. The mod was released in April 2012, so it's 2013 there. We've had over 1.7 million players. Our peak of concurrence was about 80,000, at which point we had to stop counting. Arma 2 on Steam was in the top 10 for 10 months, and that was for a game that was about 4 years old, recently ousted by Arma 3. I'm not jealous. So, DayZ, for those who don't know, it's a mod for Arma 2, which is a military shooter produced by Bohemia Interactive. DayZ, the mod, had a persistent world, and it's a zombie survival game. So the idea is that you're running around the world, you're trying to find loot, and you're working in with other players. They might be working with you, or they might be working against you. DayZ standalone was the natural progress from the mod. So when the mod became very successful, Bohemia approached me and I signed a deal with them to work with them to produce a standalone. It's primarily obviously focused on PC development. The release is scheduled for when it's done, thanks Valve, and it's going for an alpha Minecraft style release where we release the alpha at a low price point and over time we progressively adjust it. At the location of our development is in Prague with Bohemia Interactive. So the origins. DayZ actually had its birth after I left She Interactive. I ended up working with the Army and as an officer. And I had a really interesting experience when I was posted with the Singaporean military on a jungle training exercise. And that was when I became really interested in the computers in terms of emotional training, because I thought back to my experiences playing games, like when I first played XCOM, and I didn't have the internet, and I discovered the application by accident on my brother's computer. So I had this sort of weird experience where I was actually exploring the game, and it was an incredibly emotional experience. So I wanted to look at modeling these thought processes in the game. And I wanted to see whether that was possible and how I could do it. And when the Army wasn't super interested, I sort of looked at more gamey things I wanted to do, and that's when I turned to zombies. So the last point is quite important to me, and I think someone was telling me about another session that talked about authenticity versus realism. I kind of wish I'd seen it, because that's definitely something that I believe very strongly in, is the importance of the situation being authentic but not exactly real, and I'll cover off on a few examples soon. So I'd like to start the session with a very strong caveat. So I am strange, and I like a very specific subset of games, and I play those games in a very specific way. So the relevance may be of what I say may be minimal, to others who aren't interested in those kinds of games. I'm openly a bit of a single-player chauvinist, other than games like KSP and things like that. And so I think that DayZ was a real risk, and I was definitely taken by surprise when it sort of went mainstream. So I like to take big risks, and I'm actually off to climb Mount Everest in 6 days. So I think that, you know, it's all very well for me to talk about taking all these risks and stuff like that, but I had nothing to lose when I made Daisy. So, yeah, so I guess, like it says at the bottom, your mileage may vary. So I hope people get something from the talk. The too long don't read of this is that I believe that any story you write will not be as compelling as an unplanned happening between two players. And if I think you boil down the Daisy experience to anything, it's that. So that is really what I think Daisy all boils down to, is it's the unplanned happenings. It's not something I've scripted. It's not an event or something that's manufactured. The most compelling stuff is the stuff that happens by accident. So what I'm going to cover is the design process for Daisy, the lessons that I've learned both in terms of the production and the design, and some thoughts I have on putting all that together. So the design process. The design philosophy that I had was that I wanted the player, I really thought about how the player would feel. So I didn't think really at all about what I wanted them to do. I just thought, how do I want the player to feel? What is the emotions that I want to be throwing them into? And that was where the idea behind the survival came from, based on what it experienced with the army in the jungles of Brunei. So it was a lot less about what features that were put in. And in fact, if you look at DayZ and if you look at Arma 2, the features aren't really necessarily that great. The inventory system was interesting to use. and so if you actually look, it's one of those situations where the sum of the parts became greater than the whole. And I think that came down to trying to give the players this emotional connection. And I really wanted to have that. I was there, man. I was there. I saw some stuff and some things. And that was what I was looking for, not, wow, there's a cool gun, look at this, this looks amazing, and things like that. And I guess that's where its success came from. At the end of the day as well, it was providing context to the player's experience. And that's something I personally look for in all the games I play. We've been playing a lot at the office of a game called Space Station 13. Is there anyone who plays Space Station 13 here? I know even Lardy, I think he does. Yeah, so there is a few people. Like, and you know what I'm talking about. In fact, I think Space Station 13 does it better than DayZ. So I've been using a lot of inspiration from it. If you can get past the graphics and some of the quirks, it's really, you can get some really emotional experiences from it. One thing I wanted to talk about was the design pillars that I had with DayZ and that remain with the standalone. The first thing I want to cover off on is what I call providing problems, not pathways. So providing challenges that we don't know how to solve. And traditionally, I'd kind of been taught that design was about about providing solvable problems. Okay, the player's going to go here and they're going to do this, particularly when we were making a game for the PSP. The potential for loss, providing a sense of value. And I'm going to cover off on these in detail, so I'll push forward. I'd like to highlight, though, my last one, which I'm quite proud of, the what I call the prime directive, which is that we don't interfere with the player's playstyle. But I'll go into these in more detail. So the first one, providing problems and not pathways. So basically, with DayZ, I didn't seek out and say, how is the player going to deal with this situation? A classic example is their tent. So the player can place a tent on inside which they can place their gear. Now that tent's persistent, so how the player is actually going to defend that tent is, I don't know. And what that presented was this real opportunity for the players to explore how they might solve their dilemma. And I think what that did was, it means that the player takes ownership of that problem. It becomes a real problem that they want to solve, and they get a real emotional connection to that problem. We saw this with players and their clans. They were in DayZ, and they wanted to protect their camps. And that was what really provided this sense of teamwork, because they had this problem that nobody necessarily knows how to solve. this is something that we're looking at with the standalone in terms of, and to use an example that I think delivers this, is EVE Online's capital ships. You have running these massive organizations in EVE. The developers don't necessarily know how the players are going to do all this stuff, but the players actually go in and they learn and they take ownership for it. So we want to do underground base building and things like that, which is kind of like the tent system but exploded. And I think that what that does is going to provide these challenges for the players that they take ownership of. And I really like the idea of it then becomes a real problem, even though it's in the game itself. So Loth providing value. And this is, I guess, permadeath. And everyone goes, oh, permadeath, permadeath. But I think there's a lot more to it than just permadeath. It means that you value it. And I think it's a real instinctual thing with us. We know about loss. If you talk to a child really young, they understand what loss is. And I think that what I was trying to do with Daisy, and even way back when I was designing it for soldiers, is I wanted to hijack in on the emotional processes. So I looked at games that I'd played that gave me an emotional sense and the way that I played those games, and I realized that this potential of loss is probably the most powerful factor of DayZ. Because when your character dies, you lose everything, it means you value it. And people inherently understand that. The example being, if I say I'm going to give you this bottle of water for 10 minutes, it's different in your brain than if I say you're going to have this bottle forever. So when it's combined with persistence, it becomes like a narcotic, I guess, in a sense. And that's where I'm talking about they're hijacking the instinctual nature of humans. And I sort of think about it in terms of that perfect world paradox that the Matrix had in its story, where, you know, the first time they made the Matrix, they made it all like rainbows and lollipops, like Canada, and everybody rejected it. So, yeah, I couldn't say New Zealand because there's New Zealanders in the audience and they'd like start pelting stuff at me. So, yeah. And moving on to the other point I was raising, which is about ownership being instinctual. So that's the persistence there. The fact that that this bottle of water is now yours forever, you treat it in a different way than if the experience is just for a bite-sized time. And it's kind of absurd, really, when you think about it. It really is absurd. And people know it. They're having these incredibly emotional reactions in DayZ, and they realize it's a bit crazy. And it's because it's hijacking in on this instinctual response to owning something. And I gave my example there of, you know, of is it on loan for an hour or is it not? And I think your feeling and your approach to that is completely different. And this, to me, is the value of persistence. It's not about collecting stuff. With persistence, it's about owning something, and that sense of ownership when paired with loss provides this really compelling connection. And the other point I was talking about just then was this emotion trumping reason, and I'm sure there's DayZ players out there who know this. You get your heart beating and you're like, why am I so worked up about this? Because when I die, my character, you know, I'm just going to have another character and have to repeat it all again, but your heart's pounding. And I included it. I went through the forums and I looked for the stories. And early on in DayZ, the thing I was most captivated by was the stories that players were having, because they were just insane. Like, they were just crazy, these incredibly emotional reactions that people were having. And in fact, there was one, I couldn't find the post about it, but there was a guy who posted on the forums saying how he was shaking and he felt adrenaline and stuff for like hours afterwards. And people facing these really difficult decisions that they were having to make, that they were being faced. And I think by hijacking in on the emotion, the instinctual sense of ownership and the power of loss, it sort of derailed the players' rationalization processes and allowed them to sort of suspend disbelief. And here was another comment from a user called Dallas. And this is about whether the players, that they're like second-guessing all the stuff they do in DayZ. And that's happening through that emotional train of thought that they're having. And, you know, causing them to justify their actions. And I have an example of this when I shot a player. I was firing warning shots at the player while I was with some other new players. I was showing them around. I'd encountered them in Cherno, in the church there. And I was firing a warning shot, and I fired another one. And I don't know why. I think it was like morbid curiosity. I just kept firing, and then I saw such and such as dead. And the guy who I was leading around, they go through direct chat. They go, "Wow, you killed him." And I felt quite bad about it. Like I had an emotional reaction to it. I actually had to stop playing for a couple of days, and I was still thinking about it the next day. Like, I was like, that's a person. That person invested 8 hours, and I just stole something from them. I deleted their stuff. It's kind of like someone coming in before my presentation and deleting my presentation, you know. It's like, dude, that's not cool. So, and that was when I realized that I'd achieved that emotional response that I wanted people to have from it. This is a green tech story from 4chan. I really like 4chan, and 4chan are the reason I think that DayZ was successful. Because very early on when DayZ was out, I actually released it by putting the download link and the server name. It was never actually properly released. So people were just randomly connecting and going, "Oh, well, I must download this mod." They didn't know what it was. It just said DayZ Zombie RPG, and so they'd download it. And then they were posting these crazy stories on 4chan, and this one's actually from June, just after the mod sort of started to really pick up. And it's a good example of a place like 4chan where you can get sort of, I think, the best and worst of the world. You get some really creative thoughts, but you also get some terrible ones as well. And even though the green tech stories still live on 4chan in terms of DayZ, and I think there's some really interesting stories have come out of it. The other design pillar is this idea that complexity is not bad. This is something that has really following through with us in the development of the standalone. So the approach we take is choosing things that the players know. So people understand the need to eat. They understand the need to drink. They realize that if you get shot, you're going to bleed. And so these things, we didn't have to really explain them. And because we didn't have to explain them, it meant that to figure out how to actually do it properly, you needed to talk to people about it. And DayZ had this real thing where you're talking to people and you're experiencing it with other people. And even installing it was this incredible rite of passage. And I was saying to some people I was talking before, like, I sort of cringe. Like, people come up to me, they're like, "Wow, I play DayZ, it's really cool." And I cringe because I think, oh, wow, you had to install it. And then you had to wait on a server, and then you probably got teleported to the Thunderdome. So it's great that people play it, but then I sort of cringe. So it's sort of that's why I really want to get the standalone out, so I can actually give out some keys and say, yeah, this is what I meant to do. And I look for those complex games, and I play them in games like Space Station 13 and Kerbal Space Program and stuff like that. So I think this is one of our key design pillars as well, with the complexity going forward. It's also quite hard to do, I think, because, you know, one person's common sense isn't necessarily another's, which is a whole other topic. Authenticity versus realism. I missed the talk on this, and I'm kind of gutted about it. I guess I'll have to get it from the vault. And the idea was with DayZ is to put the players in the situation. And this is something I delved a lot into when I was working with the army. So I made the precursor to DayZ was called a system called Revolution, and I used it with this military gaming clan that I used to run. And what I noticed was, if we take the example of you break your leg in DayZ and you have to use morphine before you can walk. Now that's absurd, it's not realistic at all, unless you're like, I don't know, Chuck Norris or something, and then the like morphine needle would break on his leg. So it's not realistic in that sense. But because the act of getting your leg broken causes a change in the situation that's quite dramatic, it has a sense of authenticity to the people involved. So what I found was, when the soldiers would do a scenario where, and traditionally in Arma 2, if you got shot, you died, they would react in a different way. They would carry on with the mission, which is ridiculous. If In the army, nearly always, if someone gets injured, everything stops, and your mission becomes then recovering that person. Even if they die, recovering their body. So when I introduced this health system, I noticed the soldiers completely changed in the way they played the game. And some of the most compelling experiences I had out of that was when it went bad, and then the team rallied, and actually, you know, we're putting down covering fire, we're getting medical supplies in and evacuating people. And that translated through into DayZ. And I think it's using those authentic experiences to generate the experience rather than the realism. And in fact, to be honest, there's a lot in DayZ that's not realistic at all. But I think that it's that authenticity that provides the emotional context. The player-crafted experiences, and you can see my points up there, and I don't like reading from the PowerPoint. So what I want to do is tell this with a story. And this story has stuck with me the whole time, ever since I read it. I couldn't find it on the forums because I wanted to like screenshot it. This player was describing how he was walking around in DayZ, and he heard the buzzing noise. And the buzzing noise indicates flies, which indicates a dead player's body. And he was going to go loot that body. And he was beside one of the big red apartment buildings. They're usually about two stories, and they're enterable in the mod. And he goes, he looks out outside the doorway, and he sees all these dead zombies. He goes inside, he sees the zombies leading up the stairs all the way to the top. And then he goes up on the roof, he sees the trail of zombies leading to the edge. He looks over, and he sees the player's body. And he sees all the dead zombies. And in his forum post, he talks about what that meant to him. It was almost like he was seeing something that was supposed to be private, like reading someone's diary or something. He couldn't connect with this person, but it was this experience that he was kind of sharing with someone he didn't even know, a lot like Journey in that sense. And so if we put gore into DayZ, like you could put gore and bodies around, they have no impact. But when that was a real player, and you know that they lost something there, it suddenly is really compelling. So he was starting to think in his head, wow, you know, he must have run up the stairs to try and get away with the zombies. He's killing them with his rifle. He gets to the edge, he's run out of ammunition, and then he's fallen off. And he just had this crazy emotional experience to it. And I think that combines with the other points I was talking about generating the sense of what is real. Yeah, and like I say there, I think it's the basis for all the complex social interactions in DayZ, I think. The idea of the player crafting the experience that they own. So, I finally get to the prime directive. Is there Star Trek fans out there? I mean, it was a stupid question, right? I'm not actually a big Star Trek fan, but I like this whole idea of the Federation having the prime directive. So with DayZ, and this is really big and standalone, and this comes up a lot with people saying, please nerf bandits, please do this, please do that. The idea was that we don't ever, ever interfere with the player's in-character playstyle. So I say in-character, so obviously really like gaming antisocial behavior like hacking, we do. But in-game character style, we don't deal with at all. And there's a very famous DayZ player who's subject of a very, very, very good game article of this guy called Dr. Wasteland. And he is like a... I don't want to say role-playing, because it was way beyond role-playing, a doctor in DayZ, and that's his comment there, and I don't know whether everyone can read it, but what he said was, the developers do not try to dictate how to play their game. Instead, they've created this world, and they let the community figure out how to play it. What makes DayZ special for me is the freedom. So that seemed to me like his comment was vindication of this final pillar. Right, the lessons learned for production. Hopefully I'm going all good for time. So I actually was a producer in a former life, and I was really particular about not getting involved in design or art, and I always vowed that I was never going to be this producer-designer, which I now am. So I guess I have to eat my words a bit there. And so these are some of the lessons that I've learned, and hopefully, you know, some people can take away something from them. So I guess, looking back on it, pre-viral preparation, I think making yourself more important than the brand. So if you're the vital part of the project, you're the face of it, and then you are the project. So when someone comes in and they're like, we want to buy it, or maybe they're like, we want to copy it, If you're actually the only person that they can see is doing that, then it doesn't matter. You don't need copy protection, you don't need lawyers, you don't need this or that. They need you. And I think that was the big thing with me with DayZ. I never would have won if it was all about, like, we were a big team and it was all about finding lawyers and stuff to try and work it out, or say Bohemia decided they just want to take it and run with it. So this is the single biggest thing that kind of helped me there, was making me it. So if you wanted to make DayZ, you needed me. And that was really useful. Right, if you go viral, get an agent. Get someone to help you. And this was really hard, because when it picked up, I was in Prague working on Armour 3 just on a short contract. I was taking a break from the army. I was out of my comfort zone halfway around the world. I didn't have people to help me through. I had to find lawyers and accountants and all sorts of stuff. And I think that draws on to that last point there, which is knowing what really matters to you. Is it the money? Is it the creative control, the shares, the royalties? I saw a really good documentary on, or interview on YouTube, about Louis C.K. and his new his show, Louis. And he talked about why he went with The Network, which the name escapes me, was because they basically just wired him some money and he didn't even tell them what his show was going to be about. So that was something that was really important to me, was being able to retain that creative control. And I'm glad that I had people along there to support me with it. Right, which way is this? Okay, that's right. So I had no time to be a producer at all. I still don't really. And every time we would do something, so the it's first started, I talked to Marek, our CEO, maybe when we had about 20 or 30,000 users, and he was like, DayZ's really cool. Like, for him, it brought back emotions that he had in Flashpoint. And he's not like a zombie fan or anything, but it had that survivalist nature. And so we made some plans for me to just continue work on the mod and maybe be supported by the company. A week later, we had like 100,000 users, and we were like, well, maybe we should do some DLC for Armour 3. And then it got even crazier and crazier, and literally up until about September last year, every time we made a plan, it just got blown out of the water. By the time we hit 1.7 million players, nothing was surprising us anymore. And so the team was really required to be very super agile, and still is, and it's an incredibly inefficient way for us to develop. Sometimes I have to commission like 3 art assets and then just choose the best one, because we just don't have time. And so it's, yeah, I think there's only one thing that our project is doing right, and that's experimenting. I think everything else, we are like an example of maybe how not to do it. I guess community engagement as well. Maybe I'm being too hard on ourselves. Yeah, but we have results in being really creative. And I think assuming that everyone else has gone viral, maybe they would back it up, but you just have no time to react to it at all. So you've just got to roll with it, or you've got to have some kind of crazy plan prepared in advance. Top-down leadership. So I made sure all the way through the mod was it was my way or the highway. That meant I paid for everything, and that meant I took responsibility for everything. And I was 100% committed financially, physically. I was working from like 8 a.m. Till 3 a.m. every day. And I was woken up at whatever hour. And that continues, not necessarily that crazy hours, but certainly the availability. And, you know, operating with the carrot and stick, so rewarding people, but also being real particular. And I guess, you know, I took a lot of inspiration from like Steve Jobs and how I saw people like that. I know a lot of people attack that style, but that is how we made DayZ happen. It was by me saying, this is the vision, and just single-mindedly bulldozing that. And I have to do that at Bohemia, and it's really quite a challenge, I think, for them and for me, and really hats off to them for tolerating it, because they've made one particular kind of game, and I'm like way over here. I'm just like, you know, okay, we're doing this. And it's just totally alien to what they've done for the last 10 years. So it's really hard. And we operate a very small core cell of about 6 people who are on the game, mainly programmers, myself, and a couple of production staff. And everyone else operates in an individual cell. And I was explaining last night at dinner that it's like Crusader Knights. I love using game analogies. Man, I think I play way too many games. You know, you're trying to keep all your dukes happy. You're the king. It's the same kind of thing. I'll leave our cell and I'll go to deal with a crisis with another cell. And they're like, this cell's like now starting some kind of rebellion over animations. And I have to go back in with the king's army and beat them down. So it results in me getting a bit of temper sometimes, and argument is a really common feature, but I think it's good for us because we all respect each other. So the arguments are where some of our best ideas come out from. And then I usually go to Reddit as well, and I get some good argument there. So the community engagement, and this is a bit of a mixed bag, I guess. I've got the Pax Pox from Pax. Someone infected me. I mean, I like smear myself in Purell, but I still get sick. Transparency, I think it's really an all or nothing thing. So we have no marketing strategy. We don't even have a marketing person. And the marketing people at Bohemia, I think I'm like their worst nightmare, because I'll just say something. And then, like, I promised to tell them when we were making the Daisy standalone announcement, and I bet Matt is probably wetting himself out there. And I totally forgot. And we got this call from marketing saying, what the hell, you didn't even tell us. And they were getting all these emails from people and crazy things. So I think that, you know, it's all about maintaining that credibility. So we're really strong about saying, this is exactly what we're doing and working on. This is what's wrong. And I think if you make one misstep, and this is why it's really hard for a big team, because you have a process to go through to get stuff approved. There's stuff that you have to hold back from customers. To be honest, it's amazingly refreshing to be able to go to a group of friends and say, yeah, check that out, that's really bad, right? Like after PAX, you know, showing people the nighttime, and they're like, and I'm like, wow, we've really got some work to do there. It's really refreshing because the fans are like, yep, and they accept it. It means we don't have to hide stuff. But I think the moment that we start curbing that transparency is the community will just reject us very quickly. You got to have a thick skin. I spend at least 3 hours a day when I get back from work on Reddit, 4chan, NeoGAF, FacePunch, Steam Forum, stuff like that, just seeing what people say. And we get really good feedback from there. Some of it's really brutal, even down to how I talk and how I interact through to how we do our dev blogs. And I think we just absorb it all in. And I think it's a really critical part of our process. I don't think we could do it without it. And we've not only engaged the community, but we've actually ended up hiring a bunch of them as well. So I think this has been something that's been a real experiment for us. And we haven't actually necessarily won at this all the time. And one thing I heard a lot of, and I heard a lot of it at GDC, and I hear a lot of people talking about it at PAX, and people are like, why don't you get a community manager? And I think anyone who said that doesn't really get why DayZ has really engaged with the community. It hasn't necessarily engaged with the community because it's good. It's engaged with the community because we don't use the term community management. We don't manage them. In fact, they manage us. Let's be honest here. They manage us. So I know it's like semantics playing with words, but I really think that if people want to engage with their communities, I think that's what you have to do. And for me to go out and hire a community manager, I see that as me as absolving some responsibility. So I don't really care what happens in the project so long as I stay directly talking. And that we went to PAX, we didn't really even go there for the panel. We don't have a booth there. We went there to talk to the players. I don't even like to call them fans because I think it really works. Like, fans is like someone sees something on TV and they really like it and they want to see what happens next. A DayZ player wants, they want to be involved. They want to experience it. They're creating their stories, so we're kind of like the orchestra, the architects behind it. So we have to be with them. You don't go to the architect usually and say, oh, I want a house. And then the architect's like, and you're like, well, I'd like it to have a room. He's like, no, you just wait. We'll give you a house. You'll like it. And so I think that's a really big part of our community engagement strategy. And I really encourage people to get in there. And that's kind of looking at participation through Reddit and that. But as well, we want to look at things like sponsored modding. And how can we do, maybe instead of doing a DLC, We just find someone to partner with some modders. They get the money from them. We give them the tools, and then the content's free. And more people buy our game. Like, it sounds pretty good to me. So, yeah, it's a work in progress. And we've had some pretty spectacular failures, like the release date and things like that. So, yeah, you know, and we're going to continue to have spectacular failures. And in fact, I think that's something we do very well. We fail beautifully. And our CEO, Marek, that was something he said to me. He just didn't want me to make the same mistake twice. So he's quite happy for me to go out and say something that I might later regret, as long as I, yeah, didn't do it twice. Right, the design. So this is an ongoing process, a work in progress, the learn from design. So Zero Punctuation did, I thought, a really honest review of DayZ on the site The Escapist. No, I should have gone back and just written down what he said, because I think he explained it better than I could. And that was, he was talking about how in a lot of games you go out and someone's level 40 and you're level 10 and they win, or you can't even fight them. DayZ, the great equalizer, is your weapon. Or sometimes even not that, sometimes falling. Like, I think it was on PC Gamer or somewhere, someone was telling about how this guy was in a building, and through direct chat, he called out to this guy and said, like, freeze, drop all your weapons. The guy in the building had no weapon. He was just bluffing. And the guy in the street's like, oh, my God. So he drops his weapons and runs away. And the guy's got a rifle. So your leveling in DayZ is your loot. And you can lose it. So it's not just about permadeath, and it's not just about, like, the sense of loss. It's also about equalizing the gameplay and the fact that the more time you invest in it doesn't necessarily mean the better you are. You need a strategy, you need to think, you need to organize, you need to socialize, you need to get better. And I think this non-traditional leveling system really added to the experience that DayZ represented. Whoa, and trigger happy. So I think that people are also natural storytellers. This is why DayZ went viral. People had these crazy experiences and they'd post about them in these green tech stories on 4chan. Like, 4chan was crazy big in the early days of DayZ. Same with Facepunch and NeoGaf. Like, people were posting on there saying, you have to play this game. 4chan. In fact, the BBC contacted me for an interview not long after DayZ went really crazy. I can't believe I did this. So they're asking how to install DayZ, right? Which we all know was fun. And, yeah, sarcasm really is the lowest form of wit. So I sent them a link to a 4chan. Why did I? What was I thinking? I sent them a... So I introduced the BBC to 4chan. Sorry, Britain, about that. Apologies. Okay. I'm from New Zealand. Give me a break. And because they had this great guide of how to do it. It was huge. And did anybody use the 4chan guide here? You can admit it. We're like among friends here. I think there's this one guy over there, so... Yeah, a few people. So they'll admit it later. They'll just keep it buried away. So they had this great guide. And one of the first things it said on it in capitals, you can't pirate this. This is 4chan, right? You can't pirate this game. What? So, and it wasn't they were saying, you know, don't pirate the game. It was you can't. They were advertising the fact that you couldn't. So everyone went out and bought it. And, yeah, so I think these natural stories that people had on the sites was a huge thing. And I think that it was because... the stories belong to you. It wasn't like you're playing a game and you did this quest and the quest was really cool. Because all you do is you go to your friend and you're like, man, that whatever quest, that was really awesome. And your friend's like, yeah, it was. But if you have this experience that only you had, as a human, you want to tell people. I mean, isn't that kind of why I'm here now? I'm telling my story of DayZ. And people, you know, they want to hear stories. So I think that's the difference. Like this, and that's where it gets back to my too long don't read of, that unplanned happening is more compelling than any story I could write. Way, 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 way more compelling. And, wow, look at that, segue into the power of compelling experiences. So I think it, personally, and, you know, I think you have to take it with a grain of salt, I think it trumps everything, these compelling experiences. And if I can use an example from the KSP guys are down there, for me, KSP, when I play it, I feel compelled to tell my story of how my little Kerbals get to the Min and like Duna and stuff like that. So it's another example. Like with me, The fact that Daisy was crazy difficult to extol, like I talked to the CCP guys and they were saying how they felt it was almost like a rite of passage. Like the very early days, like Daisy was kind of this little rumor and you had to sort of find, there was actually no place to download it. It didn't have a website. It was through Mediafire and there was no instructions. It was just a download link. And so it had this real rite of passage that came with it. And I'm not encouraging everybody to go out there and not produce like links and you know, not provide anyone your game, but I think it did add with things with DayZ. And I, like a lot of people go, wow, I wish DayZ was like it was in the original days, and standalone is going back to its basics. But I actually take off my rose tinted glasses and look at those early days, and people had to wait for hours to get on a server. I was talking with Will from Multiplay, and because they came and helped us not far through DayZ development, gave us like 1,000 servers. I was standing up 50 to 100 servers a day, 50 slot servers, and they would fill within minutes. Once Multiplay, I think they rocked up like 1,000 servers, they were full within a couple of hours. People were waiting for hours. There's no manual queue. You had to sit there spamming enter. People were like sending me emails saying, you've broken my keyboard, you know. Just enter, and they'd sit there for hours, and they'd realize how ridiculous it was. You'd see the posts on Facepunch, they're like, what is wrong with me? Yeah, you know, like, why am I doing this? And then you get in, and you're like opening a door, whoop, broke my leads. Zoom, I'm at the Thunderdome, you know, and that's why I cringe, like, people are like, oh, I played standalone, you know. I mean, I played DayZ mod, and I'm like, yeah, cool. You probably hate me a lot right now. Yeah, you broke your legs in a doorway. That makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah, so regardless, because of all that, it just couldn't stop the onslaught of players, and it was kind of ridiculous. This is another big lesson. The players know. And I think that a lot of people in multiplayer now, they don't get that. They don't get this at all. They just totally don't get this. And I'd pick out a few examples from recently, but I'm pretty sure that that everybody here knows what that example is. So they will know everything that's wrong, and if you tell them lies, they will know very quickly what that lie is. They will break your design completely, and in a lot of ways, the DayZ players know more about DayZ than I do, because together they have played way more of it. And I keep that in mind whenever I'm doing the design, and I use Reddit, I use 4chan to keep me in check, because at least 90% of my ideas are terrible, awful. And I've learned a long time ago that I have real trouble between telling what is a good idea and a bad idea. And that's where social media has really come to play for me. And I guess the real test comes with balancing that. Balancing that tension. And it's, you know, you can use the 12-step motto. What is it? The serenity prayer, you know? Like, you know, change the things you can change and the wisdom to know the difference. You can apply the same thing there. You can say, like, so you need to have, I think, the courage to listen to your players. The wisdom, something like that. You know, you'll listen to your players, and you've got to have the courage to tell them when they're wrong, and you've got to have the wisdom to know when to do one or the other. And I guess we're still getting that balance right, and I think we will be for the next 12 months. Design concessions. I think you have to ruthlessly maintain the division. I would rather that DayZ did not get released than we compromise on the pillars. I told Bohemia that, and I said that I would hop on a plane and I would leave, and they could sue me, and they could do whatever. Ninjas could come from the roof, and I would not be involved in it. And I think that when you have that, you can steamroll stuff through. And you make change happen, and you make the experimentation happen. And that's what we did. And no design concession is taken lightly. I see that as a tumor in your game. If you turn around, and I saw it when you know, I was working on console games and that, we'd know it. You know it in your heart. You're like, this isn't going to work. It's like we looked at free-to-play, because everybody likes having four Lamborghinis parked in their driveway. So we looked at doing DayZ as a free-to-play, but it just involved too much design concession. And what's the point if we're going to compromise the core pillar? So with multiplayer, you don't have anything to pull you through. And I talked about this with the Chivalry guys at PAX, and you know, about how important it is that your design is bang on. because your players are playing it, they're talking about it, and they see it. It's very obvious within a minutes of playing the game whether the design is terrible or good. And that's why I think multiplayer tacked on to a single-player game just doesn't cut it anymore. It just totally doesn't cut it. So, yeah, and compromising on that, I think, will sink your game just faster than anything. So I like to talk about what I call the multiplayer trinity. And I was going to draw up a little triangle, but I thought it might be a bit much for GDC. But, like, with design, performance, and security. But I have, like, this other one that I add, which is that you have to have design, you have to have performance and security. So draw a little triangle, put one in each box, and then vomit blood on it, because that's making a multiplayer game. Now, the net code, everything else. And I think you've got to have all of these. Like, without those three, I think you're swimming against the river. Being prepared to redo everything. So I am real big. This is a bit of a battle with Bohemia, like the staff. You know, obviously once someone's made something, they don't want to redo it. And we do this all the time. So I'm very honest with the staff, is that nothing that someone is working on is guaranteed to be in the game. If it doesn't make the grade, then we just do it again. And we keep doing it again until it's right. It's the same thing we did with the inventory system, and we're still doing. It's the same thing we're doing with the player controls. We're actually developing two lots of player controls, and we're just going to let them fight them out and see which one wins. And I think this is crucial. We can do this because we made enough from Arma 2 that we're just going to take a lot of risks with DayZ and, you know, and make sure it works out right in the end. And I think it comes back to that single-mindedly driving towards what is needed. So if I know that this is our design pillar and we need that, then I just, you know, getting back to Crusader Kings again, I get my King's army and I go in and I nail that that cell until we get what's needed. And I think it's been an interesting environment to work in, and I think it's been a real challenge because Bohemia previously worked on quite a sort of standard approach when going with armor previously, so it was a real challenge to get back to this sort of crazy style of development, cowboy development maybe. Trying new things. This is, I think, something we do well. We just try stuff all the time. Someone's like Vespa, who's the guy who's been working on our control scheme. He was like, well, I'd really like to try this. And I was like, sweet, we'll just chuck it in the build and we'll see how it goes. And it's something that we do all the time. So our experimental build is really experimental. Really experimental. And which at the moment I was showing a demonstration to AMD and today, and all our car wrecks were floating. So I was going to try and build in some kind of Bioshock Infinity reference, but I decided just to, you know, let it fly. Yeah, pardon the pun. So yeah, I think this is our one success. We experiment a lot and we take a lot of risks, and certainly in December it looked like those were a bad idea. December was a really bad month for us, like galactically bad. All right, I better power through this. I'm talking a lot. Yeah, it's a production nightmare, real production nightmare, and motivation can be difficult. I also think not making decisions too soon. So we put off a lot of design decisions, and I've never actually worked like this before. I always wanted to try it out. I used to do it when I was in the army, and I found it worked really well for me. So I will decide, okay, there's some decisions we're just not going to make now. We don't have to make them now. It's like some places I've worked at, like, they're like, okay, everything has to be in the design document now. Why? If it's because for production reasons, then yeah, sure, you know, you can block out a period of time. But certainly for us, we you know, there are a lot of decisions that we're leaving because we're experimenting so much that we need the space to grow with that. It is hard for business people to grasp, but they didn't really have a choice when they saw the Arma 2 sales. So they just kind of had to roll with it. Very terrified they were. So putting it all together, this is probably the takeaway thing that I like to think, is that I don't think a great game is a collection of features. I think it's the mastery of them. And I don't think DayZ has mastered its features, and I think the reason people are interested in it is because it shows the possibility that it might. And I hope that I don't let you guys down with that, and that we deliver that with Standalone. But I really do believe that, and I think with some of what's gone on with DayZ, that's what it shows. I don't think it's worth like trademarks and copyright and patents and all this crap. I think this is it. Someone else could go and take all the features we put in and royally screw it up. I just want to like summarize this whole idea of permadeath and ownership. I think it's all about the risk and the value. It's the combination of the two that really gave DAISY its like thing. And the power of context. So the idea of you don't set your character up at the start with a cowboy hat. You find that cowboy hat in a barn, maybe in the middle of a firefight. Well, then it becomes not a cowboy hat. It's the cowboy hat that you got in a barn while two people were being eaten outside with a zombie. And you don't necessarily think about that consciously, but subconsciously, that cowboy hat now has like a mental marker in it. And I think that's the process that we're going forward with. So what I said about design pillars before, I just think that you just can't abandon them. So I think that if it comes to that, you should shelve or scrap your game, because you'll just get smoked if you start doing that. And I don't think there's any squeeze room in multiplayer for that. And that's why I like it, because it's real, like, you know when you hit it and you know when you've missed it. Yeah, the internet will be mad. So the result, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and everyone sits around scratching their head saying, what the hell just happened over the last 12 months with DAISY? And to be honest, I was as well. So I was like, wow, okay, this is pretty crazy. So I don't know whether I've given people a lot of answers there. I think hopefully it's sort of raised more questions. But if there's any questions, I don't think we've got very long left. There's microphones up here, so if anyone's got any questions, they can just rock up and feel free to ask. If you just say who you are and who you work for and so for the video and stuff like that. Cool. So we'll go with right side first.
Okay. Stage. Hi, Dean. My name is Hugh. I'm from Unknown Worlds Entertainment. The question is, you say you use a lot of new media, a lot of social media to get a lot of feedback on the game. And I'm sure there's other game developers in the room that have tried to do that, but their skins weren't thick enough. How did you develop a skin thick enough to be able to maintain a consistent 3 hours every day of that feedback?
I joined the army. it's a good point. I'm not being entirely flippant about that. I think a lot of it was self-confidence. I think after I did that survival training in Singapore, it was so awful and so much stuff happened to me that at the end of that, I just realized I was just happy being me. And I think once I reached that point, everything just kind of, within about a few months, everything just lined up after I reached that point. So I think as a designer, just having a bit of self-confidence and saying, you know what, I'm still a good person, and accepting failure as being a part of life. Like, what is it Thomas Edison said? Like, you know, the 99 failures were the, you know, were just the path to the one time that he got it right. I totally butchered that quote. I don't think I could have butchered that anymore. But yeah, you know, I think that's it. It's about accepting that failure is part of the process. And I think that companies don't like to admit failure. So I can think of a recent failure with a license that I love that came out recently. And nobody wants to say it, but I would just love to see someone say it. Yeah, well, wow, we really screwed that one up. We're going to address it. You know, we're going to do this in a patch or whatever, or we've learned that for next time. And as a consumer, I respect that. And I think, yeah, so I think that's it. I don't know whether that helps, but...
Oh, it does. Thank you, Dean.
Thanks. Left.
Hey. David Hinkle, Joystick. I just had a question about that free-to-play thing that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. How far along did that idea get? Why did you scrap it? Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. So when I was looking with who to sign with, and I hope Bohemia doesn't mind doing this, but I think it's really important to talk about all this stuff. So I looked at signing with a bunch of different companies, and a lot of them were really interested in free-to-play. And we're talking a lot of money, like stupid money. And I just felt like I just knew it wouldn't work. And I think there's a lot of situations I've been in when I've been working with games and that where I kind of felt like we all in the room knew that something was a bad idea, but we just didn't want to admit it. And I just think that it was because DAISY is about survival. You can't buy your way into that. If you buy your way into that, you're hijacking that. I still think there's room for free-to-play games, and I've got one idea of mine that I think could actually work quite well with free-to-play, but I think that it's like putting a round peg in a square hole. And, you know, the DAISY experience is about what you find in the world, introducing a shop and things like that to it, or even cosmetic items. Like, my cowboy hat point. It's not about cosmetic items. There's no cosmetic items in DAISY. That hat you found has a story. It's not, I worked at Burger King for an hour to buy that hat. You know, it's I found that hat in a firefight. So, yeah. Does that answer your question?
No, it does. Thank you.
It's kind of hard to see with all these lights. Hello there.
Hi there, Stephen Ahn, also from Unknown Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what your thoughts on are on in terms of accessibility. Like, do people complain about like a lack of a tutorial in DayZ? And do you think it would be appropriate or not appropriate?
People do complain about a lack of tutorial in DayZ. And I don't really like tutorials. But then we go back to my first slide, which is where I'm strange. So I don't really entirely feel qualified to answer your question, but I'll give you what I think. So I think that I really want to make it that it's a social thing to learn DayZ. So let's say, for example, DayZ appears on the consoles. I would really hate it to have this crazy, ridiculous tutorial, because I just want console gamers to suck it up and talk to each other and learn about it. It's like me, when I first played XCOM, I discovered there was no manual, there was no internet, and for me, that made it this emotional experience. So, yeah, I guess we'll see how that goes. But for me, I just think I get in the tutorial and it really annoys me. I like to get irritated with the gamers I'm trying to figure out, and then I'm like, oh, I feel like I've figured it out, and I reinforce the process. Again, it was something I found in the army. When they tried to give me this list of how to use the weapon, I couldn't figure it out. It was better when I got it, and I was playing with it, and I was almost figuring it out with myself. A little bit dangerous, though, especially with grenades. Yeah, my instructors in Singapore are probably laughing about that one a lot. Yeah, does that answer your question?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. I think we've only got time for one more. Can the red shirt dude wave? Do I have time for one more? Is that a yes? One more, okay. So you can ask me a question afterwards if you want, but yep.
Hey, I'm Dan Healy with Roblox, and I was wondering, you mentioned using your design pillars as a crucible for whether or not you should do something, but how did you come to solidify those design pillars to begin with?
Yeah, that's a good point. So the idea had been gestating for a long time, and for me, it sounds weird, but my jungle training in Brunei was when it hit that, because I just realized in my mind that I knew what I wanted to do, like, emotionally with the player. That's the reason I'm going to Everest, because I've got this other idea, but it doesn't have that last little, like, heart, the diamond to it. And I felt like that's what I needed. So once, it just became really crystal clear in my mind. I was like, this is exactly the emotional context I want to have. And once I saw that, the design pillars were very obvious. And I guess that's why I get it in a temper sometimes, is because for me, it seems so common sense. And then someone from one of these little cells will go do something. I'll be like, why did you even do that? It's crazy. Like, it's madness. So, yeah, I guess that's not really an answer. It's sort of hard for me to answer. But, yeah, it just sort of gestated, and I experimented, and I did stuff in my real life, and then I was able to sort of, yeah, solidify it. So, look, hey, thanks very much. And it's kind of... I don't even know how to describe it. Like, talking to my peers about it was a very hard presentation to prepare, because I felt like, you know, a lot of people wanted to know, well, how did you do it? And I don't know whether I really explained how I did it. I think it just happened. So, yeah, look, thanks for your time. And, yeah, I look forward to meeting people and talking to people, and I hope we don't let you down with the standalone. So thank you very much.